Thursday, July 25th, was a full good day at the White House. I was up early with Mr. Pear for a shampooing set, working under the dryer, signing letters, and idiot work, autographing pictures. It takes days to recover from an absence. And then a funny three-way appointment resulting from my inheritance from Lyndon of the problem of Mr. Wong. We'd been overjoyed at the ranch when we thought we had found a Secret Service man who could speak Chinese. But, alas, he spoke Mandarin, and Mr. Wong spoke Cantonese. So back in Washington, we had found a Secret Service man who did speak Cantonese, and another spoke excellent Spanish. So here we were, all of us languages gathered together. Al Wong, the Cantonese-speaking Secret Service man, new Chinese houseboy Wong, and I in the West Hall at the White House in a three-way conversation. It was hilarious, and all the time I felt sorry for houseboy Chinaman Wong, so far from his homeland, and anybody to really communicate with. But I think we laid out a schedule of work for him. Jim Jones had told me how he had gone in the kitchen and asked him in English if he spoke Cantonese or Mandarin, and Wong had answered brightly, "Coffee with cream and sugar?" A little past 11, I joined Lyndon, and we went down to the Lincoln sitting room, where Madame Shumatov was ensconced with a portrait of Lyndon. With considerable trepidation, we looked at it. I liked it, and when Lyndon rendered his verdict, very favorable, all of us visibly relaxed. He said she needed a little more fluff in the hair. He was right. It was too slicked back. Now approaching 60 and nearly white-haired, he has quit using any hair oil, and by the middle of the day, it fluffs out nicely, and the old waves return, the waves that were so dark and handsome when we first met when he was 26. I told her I would send in her lunch on a tray, and she was to stay and work and show us the final product in the middle of the afternoon. I worked with Ashton on framing the travel certificates somewhere at the ranch in an office that will hang these mementos of those wonderful journeys across this land. Glorious exclamation points in the story of these 5 years. When Arthur and Jake and Bess and I sat down in the West Hall and planned a dinner for Texas friends, which we could have on the Monday after the house party weekend of August 2nd. And then it was time to dress for the stag luncheon, at which I had very late in the day been asked to sit in. I went to the yellow room and greeted them all. It was a marvelously interesting group, the kind of assemblage that I delight in, and I know a part of the White House years, and all the more for that ephemeral character and joy. In the cabinet, there was C.R. Smith, Postmaster General Watson, and they were longtime acquaintances, like John Harper of the Aluminum Company, and bluff, hardy William Randolph Hearst, Jr., and young Houston Hart, standing in for his father, and Ralph McCullough, and C.T. McLaughlin of the Diamond M. Ranch at Snyder, Dean McGee, whom I always remember with Senator Kerr. Two of the Rockefeller brothers were there. David, we talked about his wife's island, and Lawrence, who sat on Lyndon's right, and afterwards gave me a glowing report. Such a gentle, wonderful man he is. The slim, aristocratic Albert Nickerson of Saucony Mobile, and some Texans, Carl Finney and David Searles, former staff members Horace Busby and Jake Jacobson, and of course Arthur Krim and Joe Califano. Our drinks passed among the nearly 50 of us in the yellow room. I moved from group to group talking, and Lyndon came in and did the same far more swiftly, and we went in to lunch a little before 2. I had a wonderful table, Lou Wasserman on my right, and then Bob Dowling, close by B.K. Johnson, Charles Bluedorn of Paramount Pictures, and Mr. Fred Lazarus of Federated Stores on my left. It turned out that he had some ailment, Parkinson's disease, I suppose, which made it very difficult for him to hold his fork or spoon and feed himself, but it was a great test of his poise and mine, and we both rated an A because neither one of us seemed to notice that he was clattering away like a drummer with his spoon on his plate as he tried to convey a morsel to his mouth. And I, from the vantage point of the mid-50s, looked on aghast at what happens when one grows old. Mr. Bluedorn was very interesting and very fond of Linda, which pleased me immediately. He had met her in Hollywood, it seems, and they had an immediate and quite reciprocated admiration. B.K. Johnson, no surprise, was talking about land and grasses and seed. in undeveloped countries, and he said what was needed was to reform land. That is, build it up with fertilizers and improved grasses, everything technology has devised, and that land reform, which was supposed to solve so many problems in underdeveloped countries, just wouldn't work. To break up a large plantation of several thousand acres into small, uneconomic plots of a few acres each for individual ownership would increase a country's woes, not solve them. Such talk is not the fashion of the day. And somewhere in the middle, I suppose, a solution will be found. And after January the 20th, Lyndon can regard such problems with more of an academic detachment. I told Bob Dowling I hoped to come to New York on Monday. We talked of plays, and fortunately, both the plays I said I might see turned out to be ones he had an interest in, The Crime of Miss Jean Brodie and The Price. When the coffee came in, Lyndon rose and made an off-the-cuff speech, direct, warm, the sort that pulls everybody in the room into his orbit, and we could have listened for 30 minutes. The speech actually lasted only 6 or 7, I think. I was wonderfully proud of him, and there's all the difference in the world in a speech like this, in which you see the mind and the heart of the man, and a speech that he reads through a teleprompter that has been prepared for him. It was a revelation to me, as well as I know him, because it's been a little while since I've heard a speech like this. He talked about what he was going to do after he got out of the presidency. Lectures at a few universities, association with young people, giving them some insight into what it was like, public service. He talked about the school in Austin, the library. He addressed all the men in the room as ones who had shared a great part of the load of these last 5 years. And it was true. Many have been on task forces. Many have given advice, singly or in groups, have helped in elections in varied ways. They've been a part of the fabric of these 5 years. And then, too soon it seemed, he quit and turned it over to Joe Califano, who showed charts, a picture of the model of the library and the School of Public Service, how they fit into the campus, the university's role, when the buildings would be finished, what it was hoped the school would teach, the number of professors and students, but most of all, the reason and the need for it all. And then Arthur addressed himself to the fact that although the library would be handled by the federal government, just as all other presidential libraries are under the GSA, the archives, that there would be extra needs of the library, which is the oral history that would not be met by government budget, and the school itself, which would be run by the university, there would be an additional need for fellowships and visiting professors or figures from governments here or abroad, and ended by saying that now was not the time or the place to talk about a budget, about money for any of this, but this was just the story of a dream and what was hoped would come about in 1970, and that after January, he and others would give themselves to trying to turn these dreams into a reality. And so the luncheon ended about 3:30 on a note, it seemed to me, of exciting conversation, good companionship, beautiful setting, and I hope some accomplishment for the future in just the right tone. And then we went down once more to the Lincoln sitting room, and there was Madame Shumatov and the portrait. The hair had been adjusted. Lyndon looked at it. He liked it fine. We all practically hugged each other. There was a sense of accomplishment in the air. One more step taken. He left quickly. I called Jim Catchemup. He apparently liked it very much, and we committed it to his care, and I said goodbye to Madame Shumatov, planning to meet her about August the 10th to work on the sketch that is to be Lyndon's birthday present, the little pastel of one of the girls. In the late afternoon, I had a long meeting on the library with Dr. Grover and Sam Houston. I had gotten Sam Houston to come down from New York to discuss with him, making a list of the Johnson relatives and going to see every one of them to ask if they have any old pictures or family albums or diaries or newspaper clippings or any memorabilia that might be suitable, and maybe to get oral tapes. He could be very useful. A stranger going in to see Aunt Jessie or Oriole might be disastrous, whereas Sam Houston might get them strung off on interesting old family reminiscences. We went over the whole list of government and family who had been invited by the archivist to give their papers to the library, and it's rather disappointing. The few who accept, the few who have anything, the few who seem interested. We spent an hour and a half, and I think Sam Houston got enthusiastic about it, which I was glad of. As for me, it's been going on a long time, and it seems as slow as walking through knee-deep molasses. When it was over, I yearned for exercise. So Dr. Hirsch and I had three fast games. He beat me all of them. We returned to the second floor, and Lily and Wheezy D joined us, and we sat on the Truman balcony. Every now and then the breeze brought us the scent of magnolia and looked at the monuments, talked of all the things they had done with their children, and had a thoroughly good time. Dr. Hirsch said he hadn't had such a restful time in years. Lyndon came, and we ate by candlelight. The boys came down and sat with us. They had just seen a movie. We had a dish of ice cream while we had dinner. And then I had a massage and went to bed before midnight. A thoroughly grade A day. A sense of some accomplishment in my work and the pleasant balm of feeling that I had given a happy time to people who have given so much to us, the Hirsch and the Deep.